Podcasting 2.0 for July 19th, 2024, episode 185, Shock Colors. Hello, everybody. We are back once again. Oh, the saddle feels so good. Welcome to Podcasting 2.0. We are the official boardroom of the 2.0 family. Everything that's going on in podcasting. You want to know where the future is? It starts right here. We are the only boardroom that thumbs its nose at the blue screen of death. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama, the man who can reboot four domain controllers with one hand tied behind his back. Say hello to my friend on the other end, Mr. Dave Jones.
Happy International Blue Screen Day.
Yeah, everybody, blue screen of death.
As a corporation or an organization or anything, you never want to have like a date named after you, like a 719.
Yeah,
the 719 event.
Yeah, no, you don't.
Or like Jan 6 or whatever. Yeah. Like you just don't ever want that.
Well, why don't we just call it J19? Make it easy. That's easy to remember. J19 day, everybody. And the thing that bothers me, and I do want, because you are a systems administrator, amongst many other important jobs. The thing that bothers me so much is when I see reporting that says, you know what am I going to say?
Glitch.
Blame it on the glitch.
And I did this work in, 10 minutes. It wasn't that hard to find.
Blame it on the glitch. Yeah, well, reporters don't care.
This kind of
date. Okay, here's a song idea for something.
No. Well, I was going to keep going with internal
passwords. I'm not going to interrupt. I was going to tell the song idea. Find this song. It's Michael Jackson. Blame it on the boogie. To blame it on the glitch.
Yeah, but you can't fit that in there.
I think it could be done.
It could be blame it on the buggy.
No, that just sounds too similar.
I can hear.
You have to rewrite some lyrics to get the rhymes right.
I can hear Sir Chris popping another beer as we speak.
Don't blame it on the bash code. Don't blame it on the bootload. All thermal overloads. Blame it on the glitch.
I got.
You got computer problems. I feel bad for you, son. And got 99 problems, but a glitch ain't one.
You call this a glitch?
All right, got it out of my system.
Glitches are things where your screen blinks and you're like, huh, wait, what was that?
What is going on? I know.
That is a glitch. A global event that brings down banking systems and airlines. That is not a glitch.
That is not a glitch, no. And, so I woke up this morning. I saw your message first. But then I looked at my daughter who works in healthcare in the Netherlands at Holland, man. Schiphol Airport, KLM. Are they part of Microsoft? I mean, are they an annex of Microsoft? She couldn't make phone calls. Everything was completely hosed. And then of course I see all the messages and at that point I didn't know what it was. And you're like, well, probably not going to be a show today. I'm like, oh no, no, we can't go 3 weeks without a board meeting.
I know. I was riding the toilet scroller this morning.
Yeah. As one does,
about 6:15, and I start seeing these reports, and I'm like, huh, what is this? So I start looking, I'm like, oh gosh, that sounds bad. And then there's like, it's related to a bad CrowdStrike update, and I was like, oh crap.
Yeah.
So I flip over to my email, and I start trying to interpret, what I'm seeing in corporate email to what is, I know about what's happening in the news, and I'm like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
And it turns out, like, a lot of times, for people who are not like fully understanding what the tech is here, I mean, CrowdStrike is what they call a
piece of crap. Sorry. That just slipped out. I didn't mean that.
CrowdStrike is an endpoint security platform. So you have, it's what you used to call antivirus, but antivirus has evolved in the corporate world to be way more comprehensive than this. So it's doing It's doing so many things. It's doing heuristics. It's doing traditional signature scans. It's looking for behaviors that are funky. So, like, for instance, if I open an Excel spreadsheet and that Excel spreadsheet goes out and downloads a binary file off the internet and attempts to run it,
yeah,
that's odd behavior.
Yeah, CloudStrike will go, stop. That's not cool.
Yeah, right. So that is highly suspicious behavior. So it has all these heuristics in it that looks for these sorts of things. And one of the it's constantly getting, just like antivirus, it's constantly getting fed these new signature files to update itself to see the latest problems,
mm-hmm.
and to recognize them. And so this happens with antivirus. About 10 years ago, the company I was with was using Trend Micro.
Ah.
And Trend Micro had, this is maybe 10, 12 years ago, Trend Micro had pushed out a signature update that misidentified a remote assistance software that we were using as a virus. And so where you can like take over somebody's screen and help them out remotely.
Yeah.
And so it uninstalled it from everybody's machine.
Oh, wait. And so it has that permission as well to just uninstall stuff?
Yeah, delete files, quarantine entire machines. Oh,
wow, that's
very powerful.
Very powerful, yeah.
So one thing you can do, there's settings within a lot of, so the two primary competitors are CrowdStrike and Carbon Black.
Right.
Like at the top level, when we're talking about high, you know, enterprise, high value targets.
Yeah.
You're usually either going to find CrowdStrike or Carbon Black. CrowdStrike is by far the most dominant now. It used to be the other way around. So those are your two biggies. So both of those products will do things like, if it notices suspicious network activity, it will shut down the network cards on the machine to allow nothing but the CrowdStrike agent to communicate with it. So that you, as the administrator, could like remotely go in communicating with the CrowdStrike agent on that machine.
But it has to actually have been booted up.
Yes.
Right. In order for that to take place.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So what happened was they pushed out a bad update.
Yeah.
And this update. And so CrowdStrike agent.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just because this is highly fascinating to me. First of all, don't blame DNS, everybody, for this one time it wasn't DNS. Second, is it typical for any company, and maybe specifically CrowdStrike, to push an update on a Friday morning?
These guys push updates 24/7.
All the time. Okay.
Because if they notice something, they're constantly pushing updates. I mean, sometimes hourly.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know exactly what kind of update this was. I don't know if this was a virus signature update. I'm not sure yet. But what the CrowdStrike agent is, and this applies to, you know, Carbon Black and others as well, it is a kernel driver. It's just like a video card driver or anything else. Like, it has access to ring zero.
Okay, so this is why you can boot up in safe mode, because it bypasses all those kinds of add-ons.
Right. And it's I think, if I'm not mistaken, the part of it that caused the problem was the part of it that's what they call a network filter driver. And that, because if you boot up in safe mode, it worked. If you boot up in safe mode with networking, it will still crash.
Right.
So what everybody has to do, and this applies to everybody across the globe, if you're affected by this, every machine that has this problem, you're going to have to walk to that machine physically with either a Windows bootable flash drive, or just go to the machine if it's got a recovery partition and boot into that. You're going to have to drop to a command line and remove the latest update file, then reboot the machine. So that's if the disk is not BitLocker encrypted. If it's BitLocker encrypted, there's another step.
I've lived in BitLocker encrypted for a couple of, like a 2 weeks. So I'm twitching just hearing about it.
Because what happens if the C drive is BitLocker encrypted is that, which most, if you're doing your job right in corporate, it is you boot up, go into the recovery part, into the recovery tools, go to the command line, and as soon as it tries to drop into a command line to unlock the C drive, it's going to come up and ask for a recovery key.
Which you have to go get from Microsoft.
Which you have to either, in a corporate environment, you're going to have to get it out of Active Directory.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to go into Active Directory, find that machine, print the recovery code, which is a grouping of like...
and then type it in a numbers. Million times.
Yes.
You never stop typing. I know I like 40883. I know some of this by heart now.
Yeah, it's eight groups of six numbers. Yes, it's 48 numbers. And so you type all this stuff on a stuff out, and then you drop into a command line. Then you have to go and delete the file and reboot. And you're going to have to do this. Like here, I heard this morning, UAB, the University of Alabama, Birmingham.
Oh, they must have had hundreds of machines.
Tens of thousands of machines.
Oh, it's
across, their entire network across the entire college is down.
Oh, no.
They're the biggest employer in the state. They have like 100,000 employees.
And so every single one of those individual machines that accesses through the domain controller got this update. Is that how it works?
Every agent of CrowdStrike is an independent entity. So it all communicates through CrowdStrike.
So I posted some stuff. The first thing I posted was, be kind to your IT administrator today.
Mm-hmm.
How were the people in your organization?
Kind.
Oh, yeah, they were? Okay.
Very kind. Oh, yeah, they're great. Yeah.
You walk around with like holsters and a bandito cross belt of ammo and stuff. So people have been trained to be nice to you.
Leave me alone. If they see me walking around with a cup of coffee, they know it's bad because that's like, you know, I need emotional support coffee. But
has this ever happened with CrowdStrike?
No, not that I'm not aware of any of this ever happening before. It happens with other vendors, like I mentioned, like 10 or 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Trend Micro uninstalled all of our remote assistance software.
Yeah, but it's still updated. Yeah. It's still booted up, right?
It booted up, but there's been other ones. Like Kaspersky had a problem a long time ago mm-hmm. where they blue screened a bunch of computers. Yeah,
Russians.
It's a known. Whenever you have kernel level access, if you do something, so if you're a driver and you do something that causes a page fault, that machine is going to crash.
Oh, I just thought of a song. They call me CrowdStrike Driver. Hit the road and I'm gone. What's my controller? I wonder where your domain controller's gone. Doo 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 doo.
Yeah,
I'm working on it.
That's the other thing is that, you know, by design, things like CrowdStrike, Carbon Black, these endpoint security tools, they're made to look for suspicious behavior on machines.
Right.
So where you want these things to live is in your most critical servers first.
Yeah.
So you're always going to have this stuff on your domain controllers, on remote access, like Windows remote desktop servers. All the stuff that's critical points of entry or authentication, you're going to have CrowdStrike on that thing so that when they F up like this, it's going to take out all your critical stuff first. Like, oh, all your domain controllers are screwed. You know, it's bad. It's bad.
So my general feeling about this, because the timing of this is interesting. We had the end of the... I don't like CrowdStrike as a company. They've been involved in all kinds of political, even one of the founders, you know, think tanks and political based activity. I could go way into it, way deep back to the DNC server hack. And there's a lot of stuff that they've been involved in that I just don't like.
Yeah.
And of course, that's my other job. So when I see this, and I was kind of thinking, you know, we had Trump do his final acceptance speech last night. Think, well, how can they disrupt the news? Because obviously it was going to be the top story. You know, he did some interesting things that I think were good. The news media, of course, like, oh, meandering, you know, rambling, whatever, fine. But I was wondering, how would they detract from it? Because, you know, we just had an assassination attempt on a former president, on a presidential candidate. The news cycle is kind of stuck in this. And I thought, since, you know, President Biden, you know, they changed the DNC rules. Well, we're not going to virtually crown him. You know, we're going to wait. And then he went home with COVID after saying, the only reason I'll resign is if I have some medical condition. I'm like, oh, it'll be perfect. You know, Biden resigns. That'll change the news cycle. And then this happened. And it was, although annoying, the fix, I mean, I can read the instructions. You know, anybody can fix this. Like, oh, I can get the instructions on my phone. I can figure out how to boot in safe mode. I can go into this directory. I could probably fix it for my friends and my family. So I'm looking at this like, wow, this is what a great distraction this was, and relatively easy to recover from. And then I'm looking a little bit, and I'm looking at some of their material. And here's some marketing. Cybersecurity and Election Security Resource Center. Cybersecurity is a fundamental pillar of election security. The election community and their partners in government, NGOs, and the private sector must remain vigilant in the face of potential threats. This is one of CrowdStrike's main lines of business, is voting machines.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Now, they're not, these machines are supposedly not supposed to be connected to anything, but it just seems like, wow, what a fun trial run this was.
Well, if it's running the CrowdStrike agent, it would have to be connected to something.
Well,
it doesn't make any sense.
Oh,
otherwise.
I mean, please, let's not kid each other. Let's not kid each other about the connectedness of these voting machines.
Right.
So I don't know. That concerns me a little bit. But at least we could get back from this okay. And although there will be a lot of lawsuits, and there's going to be all kinds of nonsense for CrowdStrike, it's not a good day for those guys.
Well, there should be a way to, that's always been a point of contention with end user license agreements. You can't just put anything into an end user license agreement and have it be legally enforceable.
Right.
So, I mean, like, if I'm driving down the street in a brand new Ford F-150, and the brakes, you know, fall off, and I, you know, run off the road and get into a horrible accident, Ford can't just say, hey, don't look at us. You bought it.
Well, just the fact you're on the road, didn't you see the EULA at the beginning of the road? Did you click the box automatically as you drove by?
But somehow these software companies think they can put into their EULA, hey, if anything happens to you because of our software, we're not responsible.
It's not our problem. Like, yeah.
That is, just because you write it into an end user license agreement doesn't mean that's true. I mean, it still has to be legal.
Yeah.
You know, and I think all these software companies, they claim just blanket.
Not our problem.
From anything. Yeah. But I just, that's yet to be really challenged in court very hard, to my knowledge.
So now, did you have to speak to your CrowdStrike representative, your team member?
No, I don't. We're small potatoes to them. They're too busy. Now, I did talk to a vendor this morning that we use for procurement and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and he said, I mean, this is a big outfit with, you know, I don't know, gosh, this has got to have 40,000 employees. About 50% are work from home, and he said every single one of them is affected, every workstation.
So they can't even log on.
No. How do you send your IT people out to somebody's house? I mean, this is a disaster.
Now, do you?
This is a complete disaster.
In general, so this is, you know, obviously a very centralized issue. You know, it shows you how vulnerable everything really is. Are you going to make any other decisions in your infrastructure there based upon what happened here? Dave's like, I've been here 20 years. Screw it. They can pound sand, whatever.
Honestly, no. I think changing things a lot of times after events like this,
it's probably a bad idea.
This is just my general take on things. Usually, is that's never. It's always. It's kind of a way. unless so if you're a company that uses CrowdStrike and you find out that what caused this was a deliberate
we'll find that
negligence
out.
If it was negligence, like pure negligence, like, and that's the question I have is, so if you're CrowdStrike, don't you have
a testings machine?
Don't you have 1,000 virtual machines that spin up and test every update before it goes out?
You'd
How
think.
Could this possibly happen?
Yeah.
I mean, this was a no-brainer. So like what happened is, if your computer was up and running with the, if your computer was up and running between roughly midnight and about 3 o'clock this morning, 3 a.m. this morning, your computer, as soon as it got, the minute it got this update,
it blue screened, right?
It was toast.
Right.
Like, how is that not caught during testing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we're talking about millions of computers here. This was not
tens of millions.
Yes. I cannot understand how this got through testing. So if it turns out that this was just pure negligence, yeah, I mean, part of you says, okay, well, you know, maybe you start looking for a change. But then the other part of you says, once you're tested by fire, you get your act together. And also, you know, CrowdStrike, to my knowledge, has never had a problem. When other companies have, you know, this is, if you run an endpoint security product, endpoint security software platform, this right here, what happened today, this is what keeps you up at night, because
right.
it's so easy to do.
Yeah.
If you mess up, you've just hosed millions of machines all at once.
Yeah.
So it's a risk that you're getting as soon as you install any product on your machine that has a driver component and is connected to the internet and gets automatic updates, you are accepting that risk into your machine. So, I mean, it's hard to say because once one time in the past when we had that Trend Micro problem, at a previous company, we switched to a different software,
yeah.
a different vendor. But then Trend Micro, they never had that problem again. So, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, I think anytime it doesn't matter which software you choose. This is the risk you face across the board. It could be Carbon Black tomorrow. It could be Kaspersky a couple of months from now. Who knows? You
know? So, of course, the Linux boys are all smiling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all smug.
Yep. The Mac boys, think different.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, it's amazing that that Linux has not had more instances like this. We've come close with like Heartbleed and Shell Shock and some of these issues, but with the one, what was it, like a month or two ago, where they almost got that XC library. Where they would backdoor everybody's open
SSH. Yeah.
That was
the SSH thing?
No, this was going to put a backdoor into everybody's SSH server.
Right.
So it's amazing to me that Linux has not had more
issues,
that this hasn't happened yet. Yeah.
You know, my buddy, the oil baron, he had to have people up in the middle of the night because all of his SCADA controllers are all on Windows. And that controls, you know, like oil flow, minor things.
I mean, imagine if you're in an organization that has 25 or 30,000 workstations.
Yeah.
Spread out across a big geographic campus or region.
Yeah, it's painful.
You're going to have to deputize, temporary IT people and teach them how
cool.
to fix this.
Does that come with a badge?
Yeah, a little star. Yeah, you pin on your left bra. Yeah.
Deputy IT manager here. I'm here to help, ma'am. Now, did the CEO call you?
The CEO?
No. Yeah. No? Oh, really?
No.
He doesn't call and just check in with you?
Oh, you mean of our group?
Yeah.
We talked.
Yeah. How does that conversation go?
No, it's fine. Yeah, it's fine. I mean, so, because, you know, we, like, a thing that I've always had, and this has been everywhere I've worked, a thing that sort of a pr- principle I've always had is every employee turn their computer off at night when you go home.
Right.
That's always been my, because for a lot of different reasons. Number one is if you have power glitches or like brownouts, you know, if you have power surges or brownouts or things like that. I mean, if the computer's off, you don't have anything to worry about. If you have, if you ever had some sort of intrusion or cyber event, if everything's off, that just lowers your blast radius.
Right.
There's so many reasons to keep your computer turned off when you're not actively working. And because of that, that limits the blast radius of things like this. You know, so you end up, if only five people in an organization of 300 have their computers, left their computers on last night, well, then you only got five computers to visit and
right.
You're fine. So I think.
So you just had to tell people don't boot up this morning. Was that basically it? Don't start your computer?
No. If you had your computer off last night, you were fine. You could boot right up and go to work. Yeah. You never had an issue because when CrowdStrike pushed that update out, started seeing the havoc.
And then they retracted it. Yeah. Rolled it back. Yes. Got it.
So if you turned your computer off at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and left the office yesterday, then came in at 8 o'clock this morning and booted it up, you never had any indication there was a problem.
Because I'm a guy who always leaves his computer on, always.
Right.
Day and night. And so, you know, and should I also adhere to the sage advice?
Well, that advice applies to people who have no services running on their machine that they need to access, which is 99% of all corporate employees.
Right.
The 1% of people like in system admin and or things like that, or home computers that this applies to, you know, that doesn't apply. But you know, I have generally about four different machines I bounce between. I leave two of them on because they have things I need. And like this podcast rig, it's running my node. So
yeah.
But if you don't have a reason to, I think it's always a good idea to keep it off. Because you don't it could be a Windows Defender had this problem a few years ago.
Oh, really?
They started bricking machines with a bad antivirus update. And so, I mean, it could be Windows itself that causes this.
Yeah, that's always my fear.
Yeah. That's a real thing. That has happened. So just in general, in a corporate environment, I have seen so many catastrophes averted by enforcing a corporate policy of powering off your machines at night.
Yeah. Well, did anyone give you any
butt many times?
Did anyone give you any gifts or come in and say, "Hey, thanks, Dave"?
No. I got a bunch of rough morning, huh?
Okay. Well, I got that. And that's almost like, "Hey, jiggle the handle, fool." Yeah, I don't know if rough morning helps.
Yeah, and anytime something like this happens, you always get a few. Like the stragglers that get in at like, you know, 10 a.m.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Yeah, they're like, hey, something seems to be wrong with my computer. Like, oh, yeah, really?
Hello, you're Captain not, Obvious. Kidding. Welcome to the party. Yeah. Well, I'm glad it wasn't too bad because I was like, oh, man, if this is really bad, Dave's going to be working all weekend. I was afraid of that.
Yeah, I feel for my brothers and sisters in IT out there that are going to be working for days to fix this.
Yeah.
I mean, think about you like here at UAB Hospital in Birmingham. Think about the MRI machines.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh man. It's a nightmare. There's going to be so much fallout from this.
Yeah. Well, change the news cycle. Good job, everybody. That's all we really needed. Just change the news cycle. Yeah. That's how we roll. Corporate America.
The distraction.
Yeah, that's right. Of the week. That's right. And of course, this coming to you from the company who we know very well here at Podcasting 2.0. This is their corporate sound. That was their pew map, their pew pew map.
That's right. Pew pew. Was that that was for blue
that was CrowdStrike.
Yeah, but what would they were tracking something?
No, it was just like look at the threat map. You know, this is every single thing you see is an attack. Remember that stupid map?
But that map, they made that map in to give real time tracking of some
bull crap
thing that was going across the globe.
Let me see if I can find it. Let me see.
It was like what was the name of that thing that hit Europe so hard a few years ago?
Here, it's the live cyber threat map.
Yeah,
I think they took out the pew pew though. They took out the pew pew.
It was that worm that was going through, that was hitting Europe like crazy.
Huh.
Oh, some eternal blue?
I don't know.
No, that's not right.
The threat map is pretty interesting, but it's too bad they took out the pew pews. I got to provide my own here. There we go. I feel better now. No, I'm looking at it.
They still have it. They still run it.
Yeah. Threat map. Is it Checkpoint? Was that Checkpoint who had that? Is Checkpoint from CloudStrike? I can't remember now. Anyway. Man,
it's killing me that I can't remember the name of that thing because there was like a whole bunch of, okay. So do you remember this? It was like this worm.
Nimda?
No.
Stormworm? I'm just reading from the boardroom.
It was this worm that started going across primarily Europe, and then this dude registered a domain that he found in the disassembled code of the worm, and registering that domain stopped its propagation. Like it was checking for that domain.
Yeah, that domain, and it was non-existent. I can recall this.
And then the guy who registered it ended up getting on like the
Morto NSA worm
watch list.
The Morto worm? The flaccid worm. Funny now.
Flaccid.
it should be.
He ended up on the NSA watch list.
Oh, of course. Went to jail. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it makes nothing but sense.
Yeah, I can't.
Anyway, welcome back, everybody. Good to be back in the boardroom. We do have a number of pressing issues to take care of today.
Mm-hmm.
You want to start with wallets?
Let's see. If I can pull myself away from WannaCry. That's it.
WannaCry. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was the kill switch was a domain registration. Yeah, WannaCry. That was the first time I saw the Pew Pew map was WannaCry.
Hmm.
Okay. Because somebody built a tracker. Anyway. So what are we doing?
Well, we've had a little issue with wallets recently, and we've since the last board meeting, you and I, and I guess everybody has kind of been banging their head. What are we going to do? The main issue being, that custodial wallets with KeySend or custodial wallets in general are clearly going to be a problem for a whole bunch of reasons. And we've been looking for solutions that do not include KeySend, seeing as it's pretty much the, pardon me for the gingers, but the ugly redheaded stepchild of Lightning. And it's just not being supported and people really don't care much. It's kind of, it's there, but everyone's, more interested in Bolt 12, which by itself is funny. So we kind of went through an interesting exercise. First of all, there are solutions for people who want to be sovereign. AlbiHub, there's plenty, you can run your own node. There's plenty of ways that you can do it if you want to be sovereign. But if you want to have a custodial type solution where you don't have to think too much, you're really going to have to do that with someone with an outfit that has a money transmitter license. This is why Fountain has no issue. Seeing as their back end is Zebedee, and Zebedee, except for Florida, has money transmitter licenses, so they can legally do this and be custodial. Mm-hmm. I think that's why Wavelake moved to them as well, because it's for music. Really, to onboard listeners is a nightmare. To onboard podcasters is kind of doable if you want to help them set up an Albi hub or your own node. I mean, the podcasters are kind of like the ham radio operators of podcasting. It's like, I'm willing to try it and dive in as long as Dave Jackson can explain it to me. And but for listeners, but when you get to musicians, no, that's just a non-starter, and it becomes very confusing when you're like, well, you know, you want to get a fountain wallet, and you do, there's a lot of steps. It kind of complicated Albi, which we had, of course, centralized on. We all knew it. We all knew that this could be a problem one way or the other. Luckily, the problem came, and we all saw it, and we started searching for solutions. And so one of the things that you, the last time we were in the board meeting, one of the things we came up with was the idea of eCash. And the reason why eCash was interesting is because it was easy to, it can use any transport mechanism. So you could even, you can even send a payment through email technically. It's just a just a token that you're sending. It's a long string of characters. And the Mint side of it, which we don't have to go into, was running through the Strike API, and Strike, of course, has a money transmitter license. And Strike, I think that because of this, we started to look at Strike. Strike does not implement KeySend, but Strike has a lot of other benefits. The number one being a money transmitter license. Number two being Jack Mahler's. Number three, big corporate interest behind it. So it's not going to go away. It's not going to run into, if it runs into legislation issues, they have a corporation behind it to take care of it. So I think we were kind of looking at that moment for how do we get something that's easy for podcast app developers to implement, i.e. some kind of simple API, OAuth, et cetera. And how do we keep it working? Legacy things working, and how do we look forward to the future when new things come along, and how do we keep an open sovereign solution for everybody who doesn't want to be a part of a corporate system. Does that kind of explain where we were at?
Yeah, I think so. Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. Yeah.
And so Strike has an OAuth implementation, and of course they have liquidity and backend and everything, which would make it very easy for podcasters, for listeners to just sign up to Strike. It has some benefits. Which I hadn't really ever played around with Strike, but you can literally connect it to a bank card or to your bank account, and you just see fiat money in there. And you can say, this was the test that I did. I want to send $1 to Adam over at this node. And it just sent $1. Now, it came in on my node as sats, but it just knew whatever to send, and it was very comfortable for, you know, for me, of course, no problem. I look at Satoshis, I get it, but it was just $1 sent, and it went through and it came in, and, you know, whatever, 1650 sats. So it worked. We both independently had a talk with Oscar Mary from Fountain.
And you talk to him too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, of course. He's smart. He backdoors us like everybody else does, Dave. You kidding me? Everybody backdoors us. No. You were super special because he backdoored you first. Okay. And I don't think I should use that phrase.
No, please don't say it. They need
back channel. No, that's not good either. No, back channel's not good either. Now, he probably contacted you initially for the same thing he contacted me, which was for his chat integration with Noster, which he went through all this, and I said, you know, Oscar, this is really interesting. We have a bigger problem, and it's your problem too. We have to figure out what to do with wallets and payments, because you can't be the only guy in town. It won't work. I mean, it won't take off. And so I probably had the same conversation with you. In fact, I'm going to read his email, which he sent, and then we can walk through
this morning.
Yeah. Then we can walk through it. Cause I asked him, can you build a demo to show everybody what we're doing? And he says, I'll read this. I think the consensus is that if we include the LN address attribute in the value block that returns an options file with multiple Lightning payment options, we can achieve the following. Bolt 11 invoice payments therefore give apps and hosting companies the ability to support V4V payments with easy OAuth integration with custodial providers like Strike. Continue to support KeySend and have a path to support Bolt 12, which, by the way, right in the middle of all this, Strike all of a sudden came up with their Bolt 12 sandbox or Playhouse, or whatever they call
playground,
it. Playground. Yeah. Playground. To continue to support Keysend, have a path to support Bolt 12 without having to make another change to the value block spec. To help facilitate this, I'm going to create a demo flow that includes a test feed with a Strike Lightning address, an example app wallet linking flow with Strike OAuth. With this, we'll be able to create a demo video where the listener can send a boost to a podcaster, which appears in the local currency rather than Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I feel pretty comfortable about what he's saying here.
Oh yeah, me too. So let me take everything that you said.
Yeah, just translate that into something. Yeah, please.
So historically, when we first cranked this thing out, we had this, the concept of two different ways to get paid, and it was streaming payments per minute and boosts. They're both essentially the same thing. Under the covers, they both are a Lightning payment, a key send Lightning payment. The key send being the pertinent phrase there. They're a key send Lightning payment with a TLV record attached that has the corresponding metadata about the payment. Who is it that's sending it? A message?
Episode?
Timestamp in the episode, all these things. So that's essentially what's happened. Whether it's a per streaming payment or a boost, the payment, the payload and the form the payment takes is exactly the same. They're both key send payments. And the reason we chose key send is because by default, Lightning required what's called a Bolt 11 invoice.
Right.
So a Bolt 11 invoice means that the receiving end of this of a payment has to create an invoice with what's called a pre-image value and then send the invoice for the amount to the payer. Then the payer gives that invoice to their Lightning node, which then encrypts the pre-image in an onion and goes back and sends it through, which is, basically for the route.
I'm so glad you're simplifying this.
So the onion is like a series of
all of a sudden
wrappers.
We're cooking with onions. What's happened to the story? God, I'm crying.
If you have three hops in the route from you to this other, to the destination, from you to the payee, then you're going to have three layers in this encrypted onion that then gets successively unwrapped until the payee itself can validate that pre-image matches. And that's how this thing works.
Right.
So you can see that they needed to generate the invoice at the payee rather than the payer, so that they could do this verification process on the pre-image. But the whole thing is just clumsy. In the real world, you never have to ask somebody whether or not you can pay them and how much. You just write a check and hand it to them, or you just send it in the mail and they just get it. Like, there's no this requirement to require the payee to do something before you can give them money is just weird. So
it's very unintuitive in today's digital payment world.
It is. If I have a PayPal address, you can just send me money if you know my email address. That's it. You don't have to ask my permission. So we chose KeySend because it avoided that process. KeySend uses the node's public key as the pre-image. I believe that's the way that works. I may be wrong, but I believe that's the way it works. So the payment can just, as long as you know this other person's Lightning node public key, you can just send them a payment and they get it, as long as they have KeySend enabled. Which most of the like self-run nodes do.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is the big players like Strike, Cash App, and those Lightning supporting services, They don't support Keysend. So Keysend has always been more, it's always been a more efficient way to send payments for payers, but it just doesn't have very good support amongst the broader ecosystem where people are. So that's the framework that we're working with. So when Albi and other custodial providers like LMPay started to have trouble and started to back off because of the regulations, it left us in an environment where we're requiring Keysend, but very few Lightning providers support it. So it's obvious that we have to switch some things up. And my dog's freaking out.
I can tell.
Yeah. It's obvious we have switched some things up and change the requirements here. So what we talked about.
Do you need to go talk to the dog? We can wait. I know how distracting that is.
Let me just, hey, Banjo, shut up.
Oh, the dog understands English.
Yeah. He
Banjo.
Let's see.
I can stop.
No, it's fine. I'm just like, I'm muting myself and hollering at him, which is proving to be highly effective. It's
very effective. Yes.
Yeah. Let's see. So that's where we're at. So what we were talking about was, in order to stay, to like fit better with the current Lightning ecosystem, meaning custodial world, we need to emphasize Bolt 11. We need to sort of move away from a Keysend centric
right
world and go and start going towards Bolt 11. Now that's so here let me layer another thing on top of this. Bolt 11 is supported primarily now through what's called a Lightning address and LNURL. That is a layer of HTTP calls that are put on top of a Lightning node so that you can ask over HTTP
for the payment invoice, basically.
For an invoice, and then it'll give you one back dynamically, and then you can pay it. It tries to get around this idea of having to have the payee participate in the transaction.
Right. It's just automating it.
Automating the generation of the receiver's invoice creation.
Yeah, you just create an invoice for X amount of sats and then send me the details.
Right. So LNURL is the sort of standardized way to do this thing. In talking to Oscar, what we have figured out is that we need let me finish by saying LNURL is Bolt 11 centric. That's all it concerns itself with. We need a way to support multiple payment types. So Keysend, Bolt 11, and eventually Bolt 12. Booberry, I know you're lost, Booberry. Hang with me, brother.
Stay with us. Yeah. Drink, everybody.
don't crowd strike me, bro. So we need a way to support Keysend, Bolt 11, and Bolt 12, because Keysend exists already, and that should be a thing. This should be backwards compatible. But we want to not also just flip from one thing to another and lock ourselves into Bolt 11, right? Because Bolt 12 is also coming, yep, and potentially other things. Cashew, maybe down the line. Fetty Mints, all these different things. So here's what we're doing. And I've already made the initial changes to the documentation. There will be a new type on the value recipient tag. Currently, all the value recipient tags contain type node. So that's just, it's expecting to have a node type in the value recipient, and the address attribute is going to be the public key of the node that's receiving the payment. What we've done is created a new type called LN address. This LN address will resolve to a .well-known URL that points to what's called an options file. So adam@curry.com if you have a value recipient with type equals LN address and address equal adam@curry.com, the paying application will resolve adam@curry.com to curry.com/.well-known/lightning/options. That file will be a JSON document that has potentially three different payment methods. It can have up to three different payment methods. Key send, which would be the traditional address, custom key, custom value.
Mm-hmm.
An LN URL, specification or block where you can generate a Bolt 11 address, a Bolt 11 invoice, and in the future, a Bolt 12 option.
If at any point you feel dizzy on the podcasting 2.0 ride, just look at the floor and it will all go away.
Okay, so Eric PP asked a question. He says, does the type equals node mean key send? Originally, it did not mean that in and of itself, but now it will. If you look at the structure of a value block, you know, you can go and check one out on the podcast namespace documentation. If you go into the namespace repo and go to the value folder, there's a document called value.md that's got lots of examples in there. So if you look through one of those examples, you'll see the podcast colon value tag, and it'll have method equals key send, type equals lightning, method equals key send. And then the value recipients inside, those will say type equals node and address equals the pub key of your lightning node. That was the original structure. You're going to say, okay, all these addresses are going to be key send addresses. This is important. I hope people have stuck with me here because method equals key send, that attribute is going to be removed. Seeing as how everything has been key send from the very beginning, I don't think that anybody has code that depends on the presence of method equals key send in the value block tag. If anybody does, you need to tell me.
Let me just check. I don't think I have that in ours.
You got nothing in your code? Okay.
Well, I'm going to check. Yeah. No.
If you type
equals node is all I have.
Yeah. So if you in your podcast colon, if you put in your podcast colon value block, if you have method equals key send, it's not going to hurt anything. But if
I do have method equals key send.
Okay, that's fine if you put that in there as a producer of a feed.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're consuming feeds, I don't think anybody ever paid attention to that attribute because there was only one value it ever was. Oh, it was key send.
I feel like I did unnecessary work now.
You wasted bandwidth.
I wasted bandwidth.
you wasted like 10 bytes of bandwidth.
Yeah, type equals lightning, method equals key send.
Yeah, so there was always only just one method. That's all it ever was.
Right.
Was key send. So I seriously doubt anybody has code that's going to break if value blocks start coming into existence that don't have the method attribute.
Right.
So that method attribute is going away because the method now needs to be specified in the options file.
Ah, okay.
So what it's going to be is the value block is going to say type equals lightning, And then the value recipient tag are going to have LN address as a type, as an available type.
So all I'll really have to add to my setup as a sovereign is this LN address. And I guess I could set it up at curry.com/. So the HTTP request will come in as get me the page, adam@curry.com.
Yeah. So,
I mean, it's confusing for people who are used to this as email only, you know?
Uh-huh.
So it's just a mind bender. That's all.
This makes more sense. This makes more sense as you think about the other part of this, which is, I feel like a monologue in here, but it's kind of like almost necessary. The other side of the, well, let me finish this up.
It's called a soliloquy.
Soliloquy. Let me see if I can finish. Yeah, let me finish this tech up. Okay. So that's what the new thing is going to be. It's going to be, you're going to have a type of node, or you're going to have a type of LN address. LN address will resolve to the options file, which will then make available the different options for receiving a payment.
Which could be two or three.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it could be multiple.
Cool. Cool. So I can still keep my key send for clients that are sending key send payments to me, and I can add my Bolt 11 for Bolt 11 apps.
Right. Okay. And in the future, Bolt 12. So the other part of this is the actual custodian API service that apps would use. And here is where, like, it. Okay, so you've always had two wallets to deal with.
Yeah.
This is going to simplify that. Hopefully.
Yeah, it's going to remove one.
Yeah. So what you've always had to do is let's say I get I grab Castomatic. I download Castomatic. Castomatic says, hey, Podcasting 2.0 podcast supports value for value.
It's such a friendly app.
Do you want to fire up a wallet and support the show? You say, yeah, sure, I'd love to do that. Behind the scenes, it's creating an Albi wallet. All right, now you got an Albi wallet. Your Albi wallet is linked to Castomatic. It's not helpful because you have zero sats in it.
Right.
In order to get some
unless you're true fans, because true fans is the best, it gives you 5,000 sats right off the bat.
Yes. I stand corrected. And anybody other than true fans, you will have no sats. So now you got to go get some sats. So what you got to do, you got to go get a Cash App account. You got to go get a Strike account, MoonPay. You know, one of these other
turn to the exchange. Right, turn to the left, cough. Okay, yes.
Uh huh. And you got to go get some sats somewhere through an exchange, and then you can send those sats over to your new shiny Albi wallet that's connected to Castomatic. So you've always had to have two wallets. Now, what Strike has done is they've got a very good OAuth API. So what can happen now is that apps can integrate directly with Strike, hopefully Cash App and others in the future, that will, you know, you can, the, an app can choose to use the Strike API to do essentially the same thing that Albi provides, but straight into a financial regulation compliant wallet. And then Now Strike only supports Bolt 11 payments. It doesn't support KeySend, and not yet Bolt 12. So that's why we're talking about emphasizing Bolt 11, going forward is that what you can have is your podcast apps tie in through the OAuth API to Strike on the back end as their wallet, and then once they have the connection there, they can have the, they don't have to have this two wallet song and dance. You can just pay directly through Bolt 11 payments from your Strike backed wallet to the podcaster, and vice versa. You can just sign up for Strike, and you get, as part of that, you get a Lightning address. You can just put that Lightning address directly into your feed value recipient tag and start receiving payments because everything's Bolt 11. Now, the one thing this requires is Bolt 11, since it's not as fast and efficient as Keysend, it is going to require for per streaming payments, there's going to need to be like batching of payments.
Yeah.
Because sending a payment once per minute is kind of a big hit, especially when you have multiple recipients in the value block. Because you have time to send 5, 6, 7, or if you're Booberry, 24 payments, every minute. That's a big deal.
Well, I think, I know that Podcast Guru already does that. They already batch every 5 minutes.
And so does Fountain. Yeah, Oscar Fountain has always done that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, makes sense.
So I think it doesn't sound like too big of a lift to me. It's an emphasis on Bolt 11 over Keysend, and then the Lightning address just means you're going to be getting LN URL addresses. LN URL invoices.
Okay, a couple of questions. Good job. The TLV record data, so all of the payment information, is that able to be sent along with these Bolt 11 invoice payments?
That is an unknown. I do not know. I'm just going to be honest with you. I have no idea yet.
Okay.
And I hope we can figure out a proper way to do out-of-band confirmations.
Because when I did my test, I sent from Strike, I sent $1 to my Breeze wallet, knowing they both do this stuff, and I just sent it to whatever, AdamC1999Breeze.io, this one of those. And I put a note in there, and the note was received on the other side. So they're doing something. They both know that, hey, here's a note. So that there's a note adding capability that is known.
Yeah, we might just need to, we might be able to like encode the JSON into the note field somehow. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Just don't know yet. I'm looking forward to Oscar's demo app where we can all see how this is going to work in a clear way, so that if we just, then we can figure out, okay, do we just need to put some JSON data in the memo field, which is kind of ugly, but I just don't know. I don't know. I mean, it would not be horrible to send like some out of band, data, but when you have a confirmation, like the thing about Bolt 11, it's a payment confirmation is part of the ride. So you could include that data in there, and it's not as bad as Keysend, which is just sort of like, Wild West.
Open up, here I come.
Exactly. Podcasting 2.5. Yeah, that's what it feels like. So, yeah, but I mean, I'm really grateful that Oscar is willing to put some time into a demo app, because I think that's really what people need to see. Because this is what way I described it on the Mastodon was, this is a subtle and not subtle change at the same time, because it's not that different than what we're already doing.
640 bytes is what I'm seeing. 640 characters. Yes.
That's a little bit small.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. We're just going to have to figure that part out.
Okay. So, well, this is good. And the part that I really like about it, We do have to, I mean, I think we've got all the people who understand Bitcoin. I think they're all pretty much in the pocket. Now we need to start onboarding quote unquote normies. I don't like that term, but, what I like a lot about the Strike experience is I didn't even, put a card in. I just had a Strike account and I just sent some sats to it and it told me how much was in there in dollars and I could just send that around. So I didn't even have to onboard really.
Yeah.
But you can, I think they actually take a bank card. So it doesn't have to be a credit card, but a bank card, or you can connect it through
like a debit card.
Yeah. Debit card. Or you can connect it through some horrible middleware to your Plaid. Yeah. I think literally Plaid to your bank account, and then you're just kind of good to go. And it's in fiat denomination. That's the Strike app. You can switch it around, but the default is dollars or euros or whatever your dollar dues, whatever you're using.
Your local
fiat currency. I know that's going to simplify it for a lot of people because I've helped onboard a lot of people. And I love church people because they're typically a little bit older, a little bit less sophisticated. Not all of them, but the ones who listen to my shows. And they'll come up to me in church like, hey, and they're holding up the app. And I'm like, explain this. How do I get this? What are these sats? And, if I can just say, hey, just open this account here and you connect this to to the app you're using and you're good to go. And here's dollars. Oh man, it's going to simplify it so much.
Yeah, I think we need to keep that in mind. What's the goal here? The goal is that you say, if somebody says, how do I get,
we can also just not have to take people. You don't have to orange pill someone.
Yes.
On both ends, because for musicians, and I really look at the musicians as with all respect, they're like, huh? Most of them are just, they just want to put their music up somewhere and like, how do I get the money? And said, okay, here's my Strike wallet. Oh, okay, I see money coming in. I got $5, $10, $50. That's very understandable to people. And it's the same step to get it from your PayPal or your Venmo into your bank account, etc., or to use it just as money and pay other people with it. And I think that obfuscation, although not what a lot of the Bitcoin people want, I think is incredibly important for podcasting.
I think so too. Yeah, I think so too. I mean, if you have, the idea would be to, because if you, but supporting these custodial wallets in no way means you can't be sovereign. Mm-hmm. You can still, you can be sovereign. You want to have options. You want people to, do you want to run your own node? Yeah, go for it. That's fully supported. Do you want to just have a Strike account and have that, or a Cash App account and have that work too as your wallet? Yes, fully support. Like, you just want to remove as many barriers as possible and let, so that people can dial up and down their risk and their sovereignty based on their own preference without having to hey, grandma wants to send me some money, okay, go buy Mastering the Lightning Network first and read the first six chapters, then let's talk.
Exactly. Yes, we used to say Jean's mom, but she passed away. So it's not appropriate anymore to say Jean's mom can understand it. But that is Stacey's the idea.
Mom.
Yeah. Who?
Stacy's mom.
So I'm very excited about this. I do want to add a couple things to this to remind everybody to look at value4value.info. Value number 4, value.info, because there is creeping in. I just have to say that, it was actually Matt from Matt Madeira who did a great 10-minute video on this saying, value for value can be time, talent, treasure. It's a concept. It still requires asking. I'm seeing some slippage into, we're just replacing buying something with micropayments. It's not micropayments. It's not streaming payments. It's a It's something you ask people to do to support you. It's not an automatic thing that it should, and that is not like a set amount. In fact, that's the opposite. The streaming part just became really nice because it's literally you're playing and then you're paying. But boosting, I think, is equally as important. And, you know, let's not get confused that this is a replacement for 99-cent song. You know, the song should still be worth $99 to you if it's $99.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just need to put that out there.
And the streaming payment, the per minute payments, I think it's a good idea, but I guess it wouldn't hurt me too bad if the streaming payments just didn't even exist.
I'm in agreement with you. Now I like it personally because I know that. So for instance, I do, you know, 200 sats for any podcast that I really enjoy and listen to regularly. I do 200 sats per minute streaming. So I know at the end of that show, I've given them some real value. And along the way, if there's something I like, or I want to, you know, provide some feedback, I'll boost with typically 10,000 sats. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty nice, you know, for one listener. So, right. But it really does require, and the only people who can explain this, by the way, and this is another thing, value for value cannot be explained properly, or at least to an extent, by your app. It has to be the podcasters. That's why valueforvalue.info gives you some examples and how to do it. Dave Jackson and Daniel J. Lewis, you know, they've done episodes on this. Of course, Kyron has done an entire series. It's critical that mentality stays in there, because you can still do value for value with just someone sending you some PayPals. You know, in fact, you're selling yourself short at this point, because not everybody is going to be on this system. It's not a replacement. It was always like the index itself initially was, hey, you're not going to get deplatformed over here. And here's a way for your money not to get deplatformed. See, you know, the poor YouTube guys who were living off of their YouTube ads, and all of a sudden YouTube said, oh, you know what? You can't have anything about ammo or guns. And they had an ammo and guns podcast. I say podcast in air quotes, a YouTube. So that was always the idea. So, you know, we have a ways to go before this replaces everything else. And it's still going to be the podcasters who have to learn how to ask for people to support them in this manner.
Eric said in the boardroom, he said, I think streaming sats are extremely important. I do too, Eric. Let me just be a little more clear. I realize that wasn't clear enough. What I mean is that, the concept of sending a payment every single minute, that's what I'm not as tied to as I used to. Like,
It can be five minutes or whatever is what you're saying.
Yeah, I just want to know, like, my app could just periodically, as I'm listening, even after I'm listening, after I'm finished, it could just say, hey, you listened to, like, it could do this like three times a day. It could say, you listened to 20 minutes of that show. Here, I'm just going to go ahead and send those payments on your behalf. It's just the concept of the like per minute streaming. I don't, if that is what it, I'm at the point now where if that's what's holding us up,
it shouldn't.
If the per minute, yeah, right. I think we need to jet that.
And there's, you know, along the same lines, what TrueFans has done is interesting, where I can set my TrueFans app and I can say, whenever a new episode drops from these guys, I want to send them a payment, even if I'm not listening. Mm-hmm. That's a perfectly valid value for value exchange.
I think we don't think about the listener side of the V for V mindset as much as we do the podcaster side.
Correct.
So the podcaster side has been fleshed out so well by you, over the years, to say, okay, here's the podcaster's investment into V4V. Here's what that looks like. There is a mental thing that happens, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because I saw that Chad F said with streaming, I don't have to remember to boost, and I do that too. So I found out that what I've noticed in myself, and I think this probably is true for a lot of people, is that on the listener side, you start out when you begin to think in terms of V4V, meaning that you know that it's your support that is the reason this podcast is able to continue.
Yeah.
When you start to think about it that way, initially you're really excited about about boosting and sending a message to be part of the show and these kinds of things. But eventually that sort of fades and you just want to send the show money consistently.
Yeah.
You're less enamored with wanting to be part of the show than just making sure the show continues to be funded. And that's where I've fallen. I don't boost nearly as much as I used to, but I just want to make sure that when I do listen, that money is being sent, because I don't want to take without giving.
And along those lines, I mean, apps could do a lot with reminding people or saying, hey, you know, you've listened to this show a couple of times, you think about supporting it, or, you know, there's all kinds of things. Just from the listener perspective, absolutely. But again, podcasters have to teach their audiences. I mean, I have taught audiences to do the craziest things. And they'll do it. You know what I mean? It's like, it's my audience. It's my producers. It's my people. I ask them, they'll do something. It's that simple.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, because if you take,
what I'm saying by this comes back to what I was saying earlier. We're not moving into a world where everyone pays for their content with micropayments. It's just not going to happen. Right. That's not how the world operates. People are not going to get that mindset. They're going to be reminded by the content producers that they need to support them, and here's an easy way.
I think we need to just focus on if we can, you know, this the V4V is not that much. It's really not different than what we already do. Like this, it's not like you have the entire world out here operating one way, and then you have V4V that's operating some different way.
Correct.
Like when you go to a restaurant, if nobody ever tipped at a restaurant, if nobody ever gave a tip, and everybody just paid what was on the receipt, the restaurant would go out of business. Adding the tip to the bill. You consider the bill to be from the restaurant's point of view to be basically zero, and then what you tip is the gravy on top that makes that thing continue to exist. And so if we just modify that a little bit and say, you know, if you don't support the show, it's not going to exist.
Right. Speaking of which, it's been 45 minutes since anyone boosted anything. Just saying.
Yeah. Europe, they don't tip. Well, in the U.S., though, if you don't tip, you don't have any employees.
I don't like the tipping example. I just don't like it because it puts it into a tipping thing. Like, oh, you're already working for me. Somehow you're getting paid, and here's something extra. No, it's the payment. It's a value exchange. I'm just a hard ass about that.
It is a value exchange, but I'm taking the restaurant out of the equation and saying, you know, the tip. If there are no tips at the restaurant, there's not going to be anybody working there.
Yeah, it just devalues it. I don't work for tips. I work for value. Thank you, Steve Brooklyn. Man,
there's restaurants where the people working for tips make six figures.
I know, but it's different. It's just the minute you call it tipping, people consider it tipping. It's a small amount. And I've had $10,000 tips on No Agenda, if you want to call it that. Is that a tip? Or was that someone who really valued something over 2 years' time and said, I need to give you some value back?
I guess I was thinking about, like Sam had said once before, that, you know, V for V is fine, but we, you know, if you're running a service, you have fixed costs and that kind of thing. And what I'm saying is, it's not different.
What I'm saying is, I've experimented with this for 17 years. I know what works. Mm-hmm. Calling it tipping does not work as well as a value for value pitch. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm not arguing against that. I was talking about something different. Like just the concept of trying to make the concept that trying to find an analogy because V for V is not different than the rest of the economy. It's the same. The economics are the same. You're just doing it in a different way.
Well, here's the difference when it comes to what we're doing. For the first time in a podcast app development history, the app developers are able to participate in the value flow. That's what's significantly different. It used to be you get a free app and you're using it for... you're creating this app because you like building apps. You could do remove the ads and pay for it or support the app. And now you can be a part of the actual value flow. Pew. So this podcast, the No Agenda podcast app, apps who are in that value flow, they get more than they would ever receive from many other avenues. So that's where it's a real difference is, you know, we're supporting the infrastructure.
Well, yeah, busking might be that's a decent term.
Busking is, yes, I agree. Busking is fair.
It's an archaic term that nobody knows what it means anymore. But yeah.
No, but like, I mean, I've always supported musicians. I don't care how good or how bad. I mean, just because I come from a musical background and I'm in the airport, you got some guy in the corner, I'm always going to drop $20. Always. That's just, I just always do that. It's not a tip. It's like, thank you for the value you provide. Even if you suck, you came out here, you're playing, this is your thing. Someone loves us. Let's see how much. Chad F, 7777, mini striper.
Nice. Thank you, Chad F.
So.
Yeah, I'm the same way. If you're a guy or a girl playing a guitar and singing at a little restaurant, even if you suck, I'm dropping at least $10 in your drawer.
Right, but let me just drop
you some money.
Let me just put it this way: if we said, "Hey, Podcast Index is here for tips," the machines would not be running at this moment.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree. Yeah, okay. Tips. But yes, no, I get it, and. The fact that the Podcast Index servers do run when our expenses are almost $1,000 a month means that even if you run a platform or service, value for value still works.
Yep.
That's like, you know, that's the thing. Just because you have fixed costs doesn't mean that value for value is not
exactly.
for you.
Exactly. Now, if you want to get VC money and show a return on investment, I think it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, probably.
You know, movies have been, it's, you know, some people call it crowdfunding. You know, it's ongoing crowdfunding. You can call it that way. You can call it that too.
The people, your business makes money when the people that care, that want your product when your customer wants a product and they see that they need to return value in order for them to get it.
Yeah.
That's universal.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. That is just flat economics. And everybody understands that. You don't get something for free. But, you know, value for value is not giving stuff away for nothing. It's because just as I've tried to make this analogy before, if you have products in a store, and people come in, and they don't value the product more than they value the cash in their wallet, they're just not going to buy it.
Right.
They're still seeing the shirt. They're evaluating it. If you're doing a podcast, people get to hear it. They get to evaluate it. And they get to decide whether or not it's valuable to them.
And
the transaction is just the same.
Allow me to add a few elements here. It is a programming format that does need certain elements. It needs an ask and it needs the feedback loop. That's why boostergrams became super important, because somewhere you need to thank at least some portion of the people who are sending you value back. That feedback loop, and it's a thank you segment. I mean, go look at GoFundMe. You go to GoFundMe, you're like, I've got this thing going on. I need some support. Here's my story. And then underneath it, you see a whole list of names and how much they donated. It's aspirational and inspirational at the same time. Now the people will show up anonymous. It's like, I don't need to attach my name, but they do have a message and they do have an amount. And, you know, you pretty quickly, you'll see people are giving $100. Oh, everyone's giving $100. I'm going to give $100 or $50, or here's all that I can afford. Now, here's a little secret. I probably have mentioned it before. The afternoon / evening before every No Agenda show, John C. Dvorak sends out a newsletter. And the newsletter is often correctly identified by people as, you're just begging for money. Correct. 40% of our value for value comes in before we've even started the next show the next day, because people were reminded. And the reminder is clear. It says it right at the top and right at the bottom. Without your support, No Agenda cannot survive. It's a reminder. And then people also, oh yeah, that's right. If I do it now, then they'll also read my message tomorrow, or they'll say happy birthday to my wife or whatever it is. And yeah, there's a drop off in those segments, but it's only 30-35%. Yeah, and of course, we try to make it entertaining. So it's a critical part of how the value for value model works. You can't just say, oh yeah, we're value for value, get the fountain app. It's not going to work for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a technology that you plug in.
Exactly. Shall we take a little breather with some new music?
Oh yeah. I got to go to the bathroom. So it's perfect time.
So I'm looking through the split kit and I'm looking at all the new music that's coming out, and lo and behold, a brand new Dorfels track, everybody. Could it get any better on this Friday? Here's Possible on 2.0.
She found me when I was on my back. She pointed out the stars. I couldn't see where I was at. She said, you're okay where you are. She always knows just what to say. She's the straight line in this disarray. Yeah, she's proof that it's possible, possible to be perfect. She's proof that it's possible, possible to be perfect. Possible to be perfect. She's proof that it's possible, possible to be perfect. She's a scale of 1 to 10. She's a dance on the green. Sky, cause she's my altitude, and she always knows just what to do. You couldn't find a flaw if you wanted to. And I wouldn't be surprised to see her walking on water. Everybody else tries to be what they ain't, never not her. She's proof that, proof that possible, possible to be perfect. Yeah, she's proof that, proof that it's possible, possible to be perfect. She found me when I was on my back. She pointed
send out the stars.
Boost!
And I wouldn't be surprised to see her walking on water. Everybody who tries to be what they ain't got in mind. She's good, sad, good, fast, possible, possible, tell you what's wrong. She's good, sad, good, fast, possible, possible, tell you what's wrong.
Ah, love me some Dorfels in the afternoon, everybody.
That's a good tune.
Ah, so good. So good.
Everything they do is good.
So on that note, we have the big Bitcoin conference coming up on is next week, I guess.
I will be there.
In Nashville. Yes. So this is what I wanted to discuss. Right. Now the days were already complicated for me because it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday. my stepdaughter has been with us for 2 weeks waiting for an operation date for her torn meniscus and ACL.
Yikes.
Which is happening on the 23rd, and I kind of have to be here to help out. So I do have a great excuse. However, of course, we have the big bands at Bitcoin taking place, which the Costellos are organizing, which is going to be very exciting. And I had a thought, and I'm going to announce it here. I hope it'll be okay with the Costellos. And I've already tested out the rig and everything. I'm thinking, why don't I do a live Boostagram ball with video, breaking my cardinal rule.
Hey, now.
With video, because I have it set up so I can have the camera. The camera can switch down to the mixer, which is kind of cool, with a screencast at the same time. So you can see what I'm doing on the screen and have the boosts coming in at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. So I figured I'd just do a live. I don't know.
Three camera shot.
Yeah. Well, basically a two camera shot. Okay. I don't have a third camera, but it'll be a two camera shot with one that'll move back and forth between me and the mixer. So, you know, I'll just hit that manually. So everybody can see kind of how it works we'll just be blasting out some tunes there. Nice. Cause I figured there's no real difference between sitting there or doing it here other than I'm just not there. And the question is, do you want to do the board meeting while you're there as well? Which you could just do from the hotel room, I guess. Do you want to, are you staying overnight, just going up for the day?
No. So my schedule is I'm going to head to Nashville right after work on Thursday. So that's the 25th. So I'm going to leave right at 5 o'clock. From Birmingham. It takes about 2 hours to get to Nashville from here. And so I'm staying. Kyron Down from Mere Mortals, he's coming. He's flying in from Brazil.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah, and so we're going to meet up and share an Airbnb for Thursday night and Friday night. And I'm going to drive back to Birmingham on Saturday.
So do you want
to be there Thursday night and Friday night?
Do you want to do the board meeting Friday as regular?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And you'll just bring your gear and just plug it in?
Yeah, I'm bringing my gear, board meeting as usual. I'll just do it from the Airbnb.
Excellent. And because, I mean, that's pretty boring. I mean, I don't think we should be streaming that. It's like, who wants to see these dudes? I guess I'm looking for some help here.
What time, let's see. I'm not going to the conference, by the way. I don't have tickets. I don't care anything about going to the conferences. So I'm just basically there to meet up with people and hang out and just have fun.
I'm glad you can make it.
So the 20th, this thing you're doing with the live Boostagram ball, is that going to be on the 25th or the 6th?
It'd have to be on the 26th.
Yeah,
but it could be on that. I can do the Saturday too. So I'm looking to the Costellos to tell me what they need. And then, of course, my number one question is, and this is where Boobery or Sir Spencer or anybody can help me out. I have StreamYard. I just need to know where to point it. I mean, obviously, I can output to YouTube. That's how I tested it. That works fine. So I need to know where to point my stream. And then I guess I need to incorporate that into a feed, or, I mean, can I just... put it all into Boostagram Balls feed. I need a little help there because I've never done this with video.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're going to do that, the Bands at Bitcoin is the 25th. I think it's every day, right? 25th, 26th, and 27th.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So I hope you do. If you do it on the 27th, if it's at night, I'm not going to be in, I'll already be gone from Nashville.
So. What's the 27th? Is that Saturday?
That's Saturday.
No, I mean, I'd hope I can do it during the day. I don't know, but I'll leave it open to them. Because obviously they're going to, I know they're going to have screens, so it would be on the screen. And the whole point of me is promoting it, promoting what's going on. I mean, I've done these and I've done stuff where there's a live audience and I'm just in the booth. So I know how to interact and how to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And there's even extra stuff we can do, you know, also I'd like some help from the Costellos on songs, song choice, for the bands that are there. You know, that's kind of the stuff you want to do. So I'm open to it, but I'm just saying I will make myself available all day Friday, all day Saturday, whatever is needed for me to set it up. Tell me how long you want it. And I'm happy to do it.
Looks like you're getting some advice in the boardroom. The 20, let's see, so my sort of loose, very loose agenda is Thursday, the 25th. Plan to go to the Bands of Bitcoin thing. I think it might be the 26th. I'm going to have to check. I want to go to the Wave Lake's having something at the Vinyl Lounge in Nashville. I want to go to that. And then I'm basically going to go to the Bands of Bitcoin every time I can. And then the Vinyl Lounge and then the board meeting on the 26th on Friday.
Okay.
And anytime other than that, I'm, you know, if anybody wants to hang out, you know, just hit me up and we'll hang out. I'll just be, you know, be me and Kyron. And then I know I'm going to meet up with Oscar and, the guys from Fountain and things like that. So let's all just, anybody that can find me, let's all meet up.
Excellent. And maybe, you can probably use podcastindex.social to coordinate stuff because everyone seems to have an account there. So we can just, say, hey, I'm over here. I'm doing this right now. Yeah.
Oh, Eric said the Vinyl Lounge thing is the 25th. So I guess I'll go to that the first.
Okay.
On the 25th cool. And then go to the Bands of Bitcoin on the 26th. Okay, cool.
Let's see. But do you have anything on your list for today?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a big list, but
he's got a big list and he's mad.
No, I'm happy. I'm a happy guy.
I really missed our Fridays. You know, I know you had a good time
because you had a great time with your family. Yeah, it was awesome. So we got to Yosemite. Let's see. Getting out there, the first few days were interesting. So we flew out on American. The American landed from Birmingham to Dallas, Fort Worth. So we landed in Dallas with 20 minutes to make it to our next flight. And because of lightning, they sat on the runway for 30 minutes. So we missed our connecting flight.
Oh, man.
So they had to reschedule us for, we had a, ended up 5-hour layover in Dallas.
Yeah. What did you do? Did you play games? You got something to eat? Of course, we all do that.
Yeah.
Vape in the bathroom. Oh, I'm sorry. You don't vape. I'll be in the bathroom. Zero vaping where you walk out and you inhale and then you just let it sit in your lungs for like a minute and then nothing comes out. Ah, it's great.
I did not do that. most of the time spent was trying to figure out, okay, because what we did was we flew into Fresno and we stayed one night in Mariposa, which is real near to the Yosemite. We had one night like stay at an inn in Mariposa. So I'm caught
with vibrating beds.
Shaped like hearts. Yeah. And the big hot tub shaped like a wine glass.
That smells kind of weird.
don't bring the black light.
Don't get it.
And so I called them. I'm like, hey, we're gonna be late check in. And they were like, oh, have you not been reading the news? I'm like, what? They're like, there's a big wildfire here. I was like, oh crap. So the half of Mariposa was evacuated. because of a wildfire.
Oh no.
And the entrance to Yosemite from the west side was closed because of the wildfire. And all this. So I'm like, oh crap. So it ended up, we got in and they were able to get the fire under control. So we got in, we stayed. Then we got to our Airbnb the next day, in Oakhurst, which is just south of Yosemite. We got to that. The first night we were there, the plumbing backs up and there's like sewage coming into the bathtub.
Oh no. Oh no.
You couldn't flush the toilets.
Oh man.
So they ended up refunding part of our stay and they got a plumber out there the next day and fixed it. It was once the first 3 days of it were over,
the rest was awesome. Okay.
Yeah, the rest was great. Because you know? Your expectations are super low, you know.
Yeah, like and it is. Should we thank a few people?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Well, thank you all for boosting. Very nice. We have anonymous podcast guru user. I see that person a lot with 2112. Consider broadcasting on No Agenda Tube. Supports live splits and generates the feed for you. Why, yes, that I could do that, but I want to use the Boostergram ball feed, and I see there's already some good advice coming through. 777 from Macintosh.
Macintosh.
Macintosh actually boosted twice. 2100 and 777 to get the harp playing. Can we organize a PC 2.0 meetup, please, at the Bitcoin conference? Well, sounds like something will happen. It'll probably be pretty organic, but it sounds like something will happen.
I think it will evolve.
Cole McCormick, row of sticks, or eggplant emojis. Thank you, Eric PP. 1111, V for V is the only way I can build reputation alongside financial gain in a fair market. Every door to send talent and treasure needs to be open to the listener. As a podcaster, I think there's more to work on showing the system works more so than pitching Bitcoin to the listener. I've been hyper-focused on pushing Fountain. Is V4V about having more money apps available or doing more to build value between me and the audience? I think it's the relationship between you and the audience. And then however they want to send value is fine. Time, talent, treasure can be all kinds of things. Having someone build your website is worth a lot of money. 808 from Booberry, Boob Boost. If you're producing concerts, a great way to recap is to go back at a later date and read through every boost as its own episode. I did that for Ainsley/Just Loud, the 12 Rods Disco Ball Show, and we just published the one for the Satellite Skirmish. Yes, it's a great idea. It's a great way. It's like, you know, we watched The Chosen. The Dallas...
Chosen.
It's the Jesus series. You haven't watched The Chosen?
I don't think so.
What kind of Jesus freak are you?
a substandard one, evidently.
So The Chosen, they're now on season 4. It started season 1. And and I think they actually, the original script or was at a Hollywood studio and Hollywood didn't want to produce it. Like, nah, we don't want to do any Jesus stuff. And it's literally the story of Jesus, but it's done in a very modern way. It's not like a hokey, low budget thing, because what they did is they crowdfunded it. And at the end of the season, there's 15 minutes of credits on the screen.
For all the crowdfunding.
Yes. And in season 2, they actually invited people above a certain level who crowdfunded and they were extras.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So a lot of people are like, look, this, you see those 5,000 people getting loaves of bread and fish? Well, look, there's me and my kids.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's been very successful. Very successful.
Oh, I need to watch that.
Yeah. Oh, you remember what you gave me for Christmas?
Yeah, the visual Bible.
So it's like that, only it's only about Jesus and it's the production values are very high.
So it's 16:9 instead of 4:3 VHS.
Yeah, amongst other things.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We got a mini Striper boost from Sam Sethi. True Fans 7777. Next week, we launch True Fans Wallet with one click account setup with wallet. We did this for one click wallet top up, and we think we've done it again with wallet. So there's Sam. Sam is thinking about the listener. Harv Hat, 7777. Remember to boost. Yes, thank you. Once told Kyle, 777. Hey, Dave and Adam, I'm still not sure how this V for V alchemy works, but it sure is fun to run full speed with these scissors every Friday. Have a great weekend. Thank you. You have a great weekend. 7777 from Chad F. Just says boost. 5,000 from D's Laughs. This boost is worth $3.33 as of this moment. Love the Podcasting 2.0 project ecosystem and all the users' interaction, as do we. Oystein Berger, 3333. Here's more value exchange. Thank you. Chimp comes in with 12,621 and says, here's your tip of the day. Thank you.
Thank you for the tip.
RG Black, 316, 1111. Here's a boost to help break up the silence. Go podcasting. See Brooklyn.
Silence broken.
That's right. See Brooklyn, 1112, 3333. Good luck. And let me see. We have, there's more here. RG Black, 316 again, with 1,000 sats. Corporate Windows environments definitely should have nightly shutdowns in place, even if by automation via group policy. Well, there's something, Dave.
Yeah, or in the past, I've also set up things that will...
Shock collars.
Shock collars, yes. No, I've also set up automated notices where it says, you know, everybody, if your machine is on at 3 o'clock in the morning, you get a pop-up the next day that says, hey, you left your machine on. If you do it again, shut down.
I like shock collars better.
Me too.
Tone Wrecker, 3333, boosting Dave's sage advice of shut off of the machines when leaving the office. Macintosh, 777, thank you, no boost, no. Dreb Scott, 7777, he sent us a test boost, great. And he sent us a pre-shot boost, got the bat signal via Podverse, 2345. And I think that is, no, that's probably on your list. Boobery came in 14 hours ago. So why don't you take it from there, Dave?
Yeah, I got a. I'm starting out with some PayPals, and I got Buzzsprout for $1,000.
What?
Baller, shot caller, 20 in his blades on the Impala.
Thank you, brothers. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Keeping us rolling. There's a month right there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Buzzsprout. Appreciate that. And right behind him, Oscar Mary, $200.
I'm going to hit him too. Hold on a second.
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala.
Very nice. Thank you.
Did you? Eric said his boost from Albie Hub didn't go through.
Eric PP?
I don't know if I saw them in the...
When did he send it? Recently?
Boost bot. I don't know. Maybe during the show. Oh. I don't know. Let's see if I can find it in a minute. We got Rob Kleefman. No note, but he sent us $25.
This sounds like someone new. I haven't heard of Rob before.
I've never heard that name before. Yeah, I don't know.
You've been defragmented.
Defragmented, brother. Thank you.
Good call. See, Brooklyn 112 gave us $20. Nice. Says go podcasting.
Thank you, ma'am.
Go podcasting!
Thank you, C. Brooklyn. Appreciate that. Let's see. We got some boosts, boostergrams.
Yeah, people didn't really boost much while we were gone.
We didn't deserve it.
There's no value. We were laid off, man. We were laid off. We are valueless.
Yeah. Let's see. Let me make sure that I've got... Yes. Okay, so I'm going to have to do this a little differently because... Comic strip blogger boosted a long time ago. Okay, here we go. Anonymous podcast guru user is all over the place.
Oh, okay.
This person is unstoppable. Mm. Amazing song, 22 sats. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. I got to resort this. This isn't working right. Okay, newest first. There we go. Hey. Got it.
Hey,
Boobery, 17776 through Boost CLI says it has been set into motion. Coming soon, a boostable mall. Going to be working with a new site headed up by a consignment shop and help turn the area into live streaming venues for live music, comedians, and artists.
Hmm.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. Interesting.
Boostable mall. Okay.
Good.
Yeah, you're crazy.
like yeah, very, as always.
Yeah. Todd from Northern Virginia, 22-222. Nice boost.
Ooh,
thank you.
Very nice. Versus. Thank you.
He says, Sats on sale. Go podcast. He must have bought the dip.
Yeah.
What that was.
Definitely.
It's been a roller coaster the last couple of months. It's been nuts. Andrew Grummet. Hey, Andrew. 22-22. He's boosting a tune. He says, boost.
Oh, I can do that for you. Hold on a second. Where's my...
Through the wherever app. Boost!
There we go.
Oh, he's got the reply address, reply key. Yeah, he's got everything in here, as you would expect. Oh, Kyron from Mere Mortals, 1111, Satchel Richards. He says, yep, we have strike in Australia for at least a year.
Yeah. Why is that only for at least a year? What's going on?
I don't know. I have it, but have never used it for anything. The amount of apps I have downloaded after hearing it on here and then never used is pretty high. it happens. Andrew coming in again, 2222. He says, Greenlight is super cool, but yeah, it looks like the fee payout from individual non-custodial wallets does not justify the liquidity lockup.
Yeah.
Look forward to checking out Cashew. Yeah, it's just... I mean, everybody who knows, it's just saying don't do it.
No.
So, I wish. Pod Home, 15,000 sats.
Woo, nice.
To Podcast Guru, he says, I love that there are more and more options for live podcasting. At podhome.fm, we provide the streaming server for you. Just flip a switch to configure it. We can also record your session or play a recording as a live session. We're small, but see lots of people using the live feature.
Excellent. I'm glad. More of that, please.
Yes. Oh, Clarkian, this is my buddy from up the road. He says he's boosting through Fountain, 5,000 sats. He says, Fetty Mint, eCash, be a solution for multiple funding source mint. Something to keep your eye on.
But it can all be in the options file.
Fetty Mint, eCash, ST. Interesting. Yeah. I guess Fetty Mint, I don't understand the difference between Fetty Mint and Cashew. I mean, I know
the Fetty Mint, and I think the Fetty Mint is a bunch of people who create a mint together.
Okay.
But I'm a little unclear on it myself.
I think one thing that makes people nervous about the mints is that you can easily fractional reserve that thing.
Yes. Yes, that is an issue.
Yeah, you would have... I don't see it being trustworthy at all unless you have some sort of attestation to balance.
But it brought us to Strike into the OAuth, and so I'm grateful for that.
And I still think it's a future thing. I mean, the only thing about Cashew is, I was talking to Alex about this earlier, it feels a little immature. I just don't sure that it's ready for
prime time. Oh, no, I think it's very immature at this point.
Yeah, I think in the future, I could see mints being a thing.
By the way, Bitcoin, sure. 67,279.
Lord, what did it? Why did it jump?
Trump, because baby, Trump.
It's CrowdStrike.
Trump.
CrowdStrike. Risk on, baby. Yeah,
risk on, that's right.
let's see. Oh, and we got the Delimiter, comic strip blogger. 28,000 sats.
Nice, thank you.
Through Fountain, he says... Remember, this is from 2 weeks ago. He says, howdy, Dave and Adam. Instead of the podcast This Week in Guns by Texans Ben and Gene, a.k.a. Two Good Old Boys Podcast, today I'd like to recommend a good podcast about podcasting industry. Title, In and Around Podcasting by Mark Asquith, Danny Brown, and Friends. To find it, please go to www.inandaroundpodcasting.com or search for In and Around Podcasting in podcast player apps. It's better recommended by Podcast Index for social users. So good. Yo, CSB.
Thank you, CSB. Always appreciated, man. Always appreciated.
Thank you.
Monthlies?
I wonder if the... I doubt Mark Asquith knows that CSB paid to advertise his podcast.
It's a beautiful thing he does. I really like it. It's good.
I do. Yeah, I love it.
It's good. It's good. Any monthlies?
Oh, yeah, we do. Thank you. I have it was sitting right in front of my face. Trevor, the Satan's lawyer, $5 from down under.
Thank you.
Chad Farrow, $20.22. Thank you, brother Chad. Cameron Rose, $25. Martin Lindeskog, $1. Brendan at Podpage, $25.
Nice.
Mark Graham, $1. Randall Black, $5. Joseph Maraca, $5. Emilio Cano Molina, $4. Mitch and Creon over at Podverse, $50.
Thank you, Mitch. Beautiful.
Basil Phillip, $25. Thank you, Basil. Lauren Ball, $24.20. Thank you, Lauren. Christopher Harabarek, $10. Mitch Downey coming in again, $10. Terry Keller, $5. Longtime supporter.
Yes.
Silicone Florist, $10. Chris Cowan, $5. Paul Saltzman, $22.22.
Beautiful.
Thank you, Paul. Damon Kasajak, $15. Long time. Derek J. Visker, the best name in podcasting, $21. Jeremy Gerds, $5. New Media Productions. That would be Todd and Rob.
Todd and Rob, yeah.
$30.
Thank you.
Michael Hall, $5.50. And Timothy Voice, $10.
Thank you all very much for supporting us. Value for value. It keeps everything running. Dave and Adam, do not take any of this home. We leave it in the bank to keep all of this running when we're long gone. Of course, the Bitcoin stays on the node. We've been opening up channels with people looking for alternate solutions, going sovereign. If you need some liquidity, hit us up. It's crazy, you know. It's like they used to open a million sat channel to people not even thinking about it. And I'm like, yeah, that's $700. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, it takes some thought.
Let me think about that for a second. You know, maybe 500,000 sats will be enough. But it doesn't matter. We don't mind locking it all up. It's all part of the service part, and including podcast index.social. You get it all. If you get any value out of what we do, particularly the index, of course, which is now powering tens, if not hundreds of thousands of listening experiences, then support us with the value you get out of it for your app, for your hosting service, for just for enjoyment, for being a part of a great community, because it really is. And I'm reminded once again that podcasting unites in such incredible ways. If you look at our podcast, podcasting 2.0 community, people from very diverse backgrounds, very diverse ideals and thoughts, and somehow just all working for the same goal of keeping this moving forward, keeps us cohesive, keeps us together. And I appreciate how everyone participates in that. It's really a great thing that's happening here. It's unique, I would say. Unique.
Yeah, I agree. But if we start putting, if apps start using Strike a lot more, should we open a fat channel to Strike?
We can.
I just don't know who to contact over there. I don't know that we have any connection there. Maybe I can figure that out by asking around at the conference or something. I mean, it seems like it would make the liquidity better.
Well, yeah. I mean, it would, of course, we open a pipe, it's inbound for them. But a lot of their stuff will just stay internal. Who knows how they even, you know, if you send from Strike Wallet to Strike Wallet, they may have their own ledger for all I know.
Just feels like if somebody's, listener app, listener wallet is in Strike and they're boosting to
somewhere else,
Wave Lake.
Yeah.
Or somebody's node.
Well, I think it's the courteous thing to do regardless.
Yeah, you would think.
So
maybe I can find out some more at the conference.
We can probably, I mean, can't you just find it on one ML, whatever, or Amboss? Just find out what their nodes are and just open it up. I mean, I'm sure they have a minimum requirement. But we could open 10 million sats to them.
I know Cash App, at least at one time, when they first started doing Lightning, they were really restrictive.
Of course.
You couldn't open a channel to them without them knowing about it.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know.
I'm happy to do it. We like being good neighbors. We do.
Good neighbors, right. Good node neighbors.
All right. Beautiful. Almost 2 hours on the nose. Brother Dave, thank you so much. Glad to have you back. Glad to have
back
you.
Glad
to have you here safely and back in the boardroom. I really miss talking to you.
Yeah, me too. It was weird being like, it just becomes part of your life and you're like, wait a second. I'm supposed to be doing something. Right
you now. Are now officially a podcaster. That's it. All right, everybody out there in the boardroom, thank you very much for tuning in. We'll be back next Friday live here on Podcasting 2.0.
Podcasts are cool.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
Bring a snack.